Hi. On the 5th and 6th of June 2024, I'll be speaking at the largest AI event in Asia, Super AI in Singapore, at the iconic Marina Bay Sands. Alongside brilliant minds like Edward Snowden, Benedict Devon, and Balaji Srinivasan, I'll be on a stage exploring the extraordinary potential of AI and the profound change it represents, not just for financial markets, but also for the world as we know it. With over 5,000 attendees and over 150 side events, Singapore will become a vibrant hub for a full week from the 3rd and 9th of June. Visit superai.com to register and join me with 20% off tickets using the code REALVISION. Use the link in the description and I'll see you there. It's going to be incredible.
What can derail the NVIDIA train? Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. With me today is Eric Johnston, Head of Equity Derivatives and Cross Asset at Cantor Fitzgerald. Hey, Eric, great to see you again.
Maggie, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Good to see you.
Yeah, it's a good day to be on. We're just talking about how busy you are because Eric looks across all asset markets and there's been so much going on. I really feel like it started even at the turn of the year, Eric, and it's just continued through, but we've been talking about volatile markets, good for business, a lot of opportunity, a lot of risk to sort through. But today was all, it looked like all the opportunity. US stocks up across the board, new records for S&P 500 and NASDAQ, led once again by NVIDIA. I mean, the momentum around this stock is incredible. Up nearly 4.5% today and into the close, it was like jumping 0.5% every half hour because I was watching it. 15.5% gain in the last 5 days. And if you look over the last year, what, it's like almost 300%. I mean, these numbers are just crazy. I joked with you, is this the thing that everyone asks you at cocktail parties? And yeah, it is.
It is.
I mean, can it continue? That's what we all want to know. I mean, can this thing continue like this?
So it can continue. You know, they're fundamental. It's very much like nothing we've really seen before in terms of the, you know, it's not just the stock price, but the exponential growth that's happening in their fundamentals, right? If you look at their revenues 2 years ago, right, they were doing the, you know, 25 million. Their revenues have gone up exponentially. And there's a case to be made that this type of growth over the next, you know, 6 to 12 months, you know, the pace will slow down, but you know, the magnitude of the recent beats can continue because they are the absolute epicenter of the AI infrastructure build out. And, you know, not in the entire, you know, semi space to a lesser degree, but, you know, as part of this build out. And I think that as the market looks at, you know, AI, there are some things that are more certain than others. And right now we're in this build out of these models, and that is highly likely to continue for, you know, for a long time to come. The variability will come around the products, the productivity gains, the impact on society. All these questions, right, are huge unknowns. But for right now, it's all about the build, right? And so governments, you know, the cloud providers, and everyone else are gobbling up these chips. And at the moment, they're really the only game in town. And so they have, 76% gross margins, which is pretty epic. And they're probably going to be the only game in town for some period of time to come.
Wow. I love the idea of the infrastructure build out because there is a tendency, and we always talk about recency bias, and it wasn't that recent, but, you know, for investors, everybody kind of thinks, oh, we're seeing these extraordinary gains. It's like the dot-com blow up. That's what comes up all the time, right? It's all of these gains, it has to be a bubble. It feels like a bubble. But when you're talking about something like infrastructure build out and revenues that have increased so much, those are some fundamentals under what looks like it's also a really powerful momentum stock. That's a kind of different narrative to think about.
Yes. I mean, there are some similarities, but mostly there's a lot of differences between, you know, this and the late 90s. So I think it's you know, when your sample set of is so small of anything that's even close to this, right? You the first thing you're going to go to is the dot-com bubble. But you know, I think that this is a much different situation because, you know, as you said, the fundamentals and the earnings are actually there, as opposed to, you know, in the late 90s, some of the multiples were a lot higher and many of these companies were, you know, were not profitable. And so there within the market currently, there is clearly speculation going on and there are companies that are, you know, likely have you know, prices and price to earnings ratios and expectations that are far out of bounds. But I think for someone like, you know, NVIDIA, the fundamentals have been there. And I think the real question going forward is, you know, number one is it's getting to be somewhat of a crowded trade, right? The momentum factor in the equity markets is crowded and it's very overbought. And so that does present from pure supply demand perspective, that does create some short-term risks where, you know, if you do get a turn, then that could have some legs. So one thing I would point out is if you look at NVIDIA options, so right now, if you go 3 months out, the calls, the $25 delta calls are about 5 vol points higher than the 25 delta puts. That is highly, highly unusual, right? Because typically when you think about where the gap move can happen in a stock or in the market, it's typically to the downside, and hence you're going to have people are going to pay up for that protection. In this case, right, the crash risk that people are worried about or are betting on is to the upside. And so that kind of gives you a sense. And if you look at a chart, it's the highest, about the highest it's ever been. That gives you a sense around how people are currently thinking about it. And when, no matter what the stock is, whenever you get people that are thinking that in all in one direction, that does create a risk.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. So the bull case, which seems like it's a little bit of a longer time horizon, the fundamentals that are supporting this. There are some fundamentals, and there is a narrative, you know, about this infrastructure bullout. But from a maybe a shorter term perspective, or from a technical perspective, there is reason to worry that you could see that it's just that everyone's on the same page. Whenever that happens, if there is a down move, you're going to get a lot of people caught out on that. Is that what you're telling us?
That's right, exactly. And it could be nothing related to, you know, the fundamentals. It could be one, you know, small data point from another semi company or something that's out there. Jensen gives a keynote speech on March 18th, which is expected to be, you know, very positive. But you know, expectations are certainly very high. And so in the short term, you know, that would be something that one can think about. And then of course, you know, in the long term, there's questions around, you know, will they be able to maintain these types of margins? Will new competitors, you know, come in? And the big variable that we really, you know, don't know is the surge of buying going on of their chips to go into the data centers. It's very hard to predict, right, the path from here, right? We've had all this surge in orders, but what is that going to look like in 6-12 months? Maybe the surge continues. Maybe you get some sort of, you know, slow down along the way.
Yeah, maybe they're hoarding, right? Maybe they're stealing from the future because they're worried about supply chains. I mean, we've seen that, you know.
Yeah, that's a question. Yeah, that's certainly a question that's out there. But yeah. but certainly, yeah, the fundamentals have certainly, you know, been there in a big way.
Hey, everyone, we're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Join over 5,000 attendees for the largest AI event in Asia at Super AI Singapore, June 5th and 6th, 2024. Raoul Pal, Benedict Evans, Balaji Srinivasan, Edward Snowden, and over 150 others will join the industry's most influential to explore and unveil the next wave of transformative AI technologies. Singapore will become a vibrant AI hub for a week from June 3rd through June 9th, with over 150 side events that will make for unparalleled networking opportunities. Visit www.realvision.com/superAI for 20% off tickets with the code REALVISION or click below. Good news and bad news. First, the bad news. Mint is shutting down. The good news? There's an even better alternative. Many Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all of your accounts, investments, transactions, cash flow, net worth, and more. Plus, create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/vision. Monarch has a tool that allows you to easily import your data from Mint and keep all of your tags and categories. It's the most customizable budgeting app. Change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications, set up automatic rules for transactions and notifications, and more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving the product. They release updates every 2 weeks and allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. After reading the reviews, I can see why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/vision. That's monarchmoney.com/vision for your extended 30-day free trial. Go to monarchmoney.com/vision.
So it doesn't, I mean, we never give financial advice. We can't tell anybody what to do because we don't know their risk profile and when they need the money, et cetera, with that disclaimer out. Does it seem wise to take profits when you see this kind of momentum, or is that kind of the wrong strategy? And do you need to think about sort of leaning into momentum? How do you think about dealing with a stock that's moving like this?
So, you know, for NVIDIA specifically, you know, that's a hard question. That's a hard question for me to answer. I don't have a strong view. What I would say is that the momentum factor in general, I think, is quite crowded right now. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing that, for example, in the SMH. SMH has gone parabolic. NVIDIA is 25% of it. But semis in general have sort of gone also, you know, parabolic. And to me, that presents some risk. And I think when the SMH does turn, the sell-off is going to be sharp, where because it is a crowded trade and all of a sudden it's going to be, you know, ticking up. And then one data point can come out and you can see a quick move lower. So I would be, you know, wary of that for sure.
It's a semiconductor ETF for those of you who are following. So when we're looking at, I want to stick with tech for just a minute because we all know the Mag 7, right? There's all this keen interest and there was a lot of worry, but it's been fueling this huge record ride. We've seen a change now because Apple, Tesla really struggling. Are we in a different environment now? Are we going to see a divergence between the sort of AI-related stocks and then maybe some of these other mega caps? Is that notable? Is it something we should be paying attention to? How are you thinking about the Apple in particular?
Yes. Yeah, I think it's a massive change. You know, our view has been, we've been bullish on the Mag 5 and have been negative on Apple and Tesla. Mm-hmm. I actually am of the view right now that Apple is a short-term buy, which we can get into, but correlation in the market overall has fallen sharply. It's down to about 22. And so there is dispersion that is going on across the equity markets, which we're very happy about, presents, you know, opportunities, but dispersion has gone up a lot. And so it's not only within the Mag 7, but really within the whole market, people are picking winners and losers. Mm-hmm. And so you have these secular growth themes, whether it be GLP-1, whether it be AI, or whether it is related to fiscal spending, so some of the CHIPS Act, et cetera. Then on the other side of the coin, you have those companies that don't have those secular tailwinds and maybe have higher debt levels, are smaller cap, are more cyclical, present more risk, or are selling products, particularly in tech, that could get, with a buying of the technology infrastructure in AI, could actually take away from spending elsewhere. And they could be hurt by that. So there's really a bifurcation going on in the market. To your question about the Mag 7, you know, Apple has been under significant pressure. And you know, they haven't come out with a AI strategy yet. They're scheduled to at the Worldwide Developers Conference in June. And the multiple has been very high, considering that their growth has been zero for about a year and a half. Their estimates have come down, and yet their multiple has been in the high 20s. And so finally, that has now re-rated lower. And so now you're talking about a multiple that's more 24, 25. They at least have announced when they're going to be talking about their AI strategy. But there's a lot of questions around can they really have an impact? Are they really late to party? And then the kicker with Apple is that they've had the data points coming out of China have been very weak. And you know, Huawei taking share, there's some, you know, nationalism going on there and other factors. But the magnitude, I'll give you one stat, the magnitude of the sell-off is pretty historic. So if you look at Apple relative to the S&P 500, which that's the way we look at it, the RSI is down to about 12. So over the course of the last, you know, 30 years, of Apple being, you know, around, that is the lowest RSI in its history. Mm-hmm. And just to give you a magnitude of how much of an underperformance this really has been from Apple.
Wow. That's interesting. And that's going to make some people think, but it's hard, you know, because we feel like we're in this environment where there is so much that's new coming with AI that, you know, can you keep getting the repeats of the past? A lot of people are kind of thinking about that, or is this a change in the guard? You know, that's a tough one.
So yeah, and it's also, I would also say Google has also been an underperformer. And, you know, there's going to be, when we talk about products, that's where, and I was mentioning earlier, the variability. Mm. We don't know what search is going to look like in, you know, 1 to 5 years. And Google has over 90% market share in search and is obviously quite profitable. And so now the market is starting to discount their multiple because of this uncertainty.
Yeah. Because the existential question is, just because they're late, are they late and it's the beginning of a different era, or are they just waiting and they're going to get it really right because they have the right management, and then they end up having the kind of killer, you know, the killer app or the killer functionality, and they've just been working on it behind their Silicon Valley walls. You know, that's the thing that I think we all flip around on, especially since both of them have a history of doing exactly that. So, but who knows, right? That's the crystal ball we don't have. When we're talking about dispersion and broadening out, I'm wondering, so obviously we've been talking about a lot about tech and about Mag 5. It's where the momentum has been. A lot of people sitting in those names or have some exposure to them in their portfolios or their retirement. What about the broader S&P 500 or even the Russell? I think that you've been watching that, and you know, we'll have people on who say like that is an indicator for them, like the performance of the Russell, and if they're participating, if they're moving higher, would you expect to see in the picking of winners and losers and all of that now, would you expect to see opportunity there, or is that just because of maybe the rate environment tricky? How do you think about the broader stock market?
So I think, you know, around the Russell, we made a tactical bullish call about, I guess, about 2 weeks ago. Mm. But I think it's really going to be a trading vehicle and can get trading bounces. Mm. But I don't think it's going to be something that you're going to want to be just persistently long relative to the S&P 500. So, there's still a large portion of the Russell that is not profitable. Mm. It has higher exposure to financials, has higher leverage. And, you know, we can get into this, but I think that rates are going to stay higher than the market would hope for, or that would be something that would be helpful to the IWM. So if you're going to have, you know, higher rates, which I think we are going to have, then, and you potentially have some cyclicality risk, then IWM is probably not where you want to be. Having said that, why do we make the tactical case? Because it has been, it's been a huge laggard. People are looking for, in a market where sort of everything's rallying, people look at, okay, what hasn't moved yet? And also what is less crowded? So if we were to get a momentum unwind that I was speaking about earlier, that would actually benefit something like the IWM, because that's not where positioning is crowded. That's not where people have piled into. And that could actually be helpful to the Russell 2000.
Yeah, I think it's a great point about the leverage and the rate environment. So we do have employment numbers tomorrow. What is the rate backdrop? I mean, do you think that we had Powell saying today, you know, inflation's moved lower than we thought it was going to, and that's been a surprise. He did keep the door open for rate cuts, but you know, he keeps emphasizing that they're not in a hurry. What makes you think they're gonna be higher for longer?
So it's interesting. Yeah, he was, you know, fairly, you know, on the margin dovish today.
Yeah.
If you think about what's going on right now, if you look at inflation break-evens, so five-year inflation break-evens, which are right now about 2.4%, they're close to a one-year high. And you have financial conditions that are the easiest that we've seen in the last couple of years. You have gotten a couple inflationary data points, only 1 month, but that showed an uptick. And you still have an unemployment rate that's 3.7%. And you have an equity market that is showing a lot of exuberance with new highs, Bitcoin going parabolic, et cetera. So if someone just told you that environment and you didn't know anything else about what the Fed has said or what the rates market is pricing in, you know, to me, it's not necessarily an environment that you would expect the Fed to be cutting rates. And so while, you know, they're talking about how restrictive policy is right now as inflation comes down, that gap is widening, totally get that. But I think there is risk that as they go into cut mode, which they made very clearly, the first cut is really important because it's not just going to be one, right? It's a signal of a trend that once you get that going and you have this exuberant markets right now, that could be a very tough combination that I think presents risk of inflation moving up again.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Which is why it was interesting that he kept the door open on rate cuts. But he could have easily just said nothing and just said, we're going to watch and be patient, which would have been a bit more hawkish.
Yes.
So I was surprised that he even introduced that idea because that's been the issue all along. You bring up a good point, though. We have seen stocks going up, Bitcoin going up, bond yields were down after Powell's comment. That doesn't seem consistent. Somewhere along the line, or can all these things rally at the same time? What does that tell us?
Yes, so it's an everything rally. So literally everything from bonds to the other end of the spectrum, crypto, gold, stocks, you know, credit is at its tights, absorbing a significant amount of supply year to date. So it's been a buy everything. And I think that one of the factors that could account for that is that there is an expectation, which is certainly our view, that QT is likely going to tail off, that they're going to wind it down, start talking about it possibly or likely in the March meeting, and that they will wind down QT over the course of the next 6 months. And so I think that winding QT to zero, the next step, not right away, but the next step is launching QE. Because ultimately, the reason why they are going to be ending QT is not because they necessarily want to, but because they have to, based on the supply and demand dynamics that are out there in the debt market. And so I think that down the road, the market is also thinking not only are they going to end that, but they're going to have to start buying bonds to monetize the debt. Because
so this is not end of QT, start of QE because of the economy or because of some financial break. This is because they have to manage the debt.
That's right. I mean, it's, you know, the choices for getting our debt under control, raising taxes, cutting spending, or monetizing. And I think it's pretty clear that the first two are just not going to happen. Not anytime soon. So you're
less than an election year.
Right. Correct. Election year, and certainly both platforms of the two, you know, leading candidates at the moment are for anything around touching entitlements or touching spending or anything of the sort. So it's going to have to be, the buyer is going to have to be the Fed, because, you know, certainly our interest costs continue to rise. They will continue to rise. And there's no cut to spending.
So in that, against that backdrop, there is no reason to think anything has a pullback, right? Because we're looking at, and if we layer on that for global watchers, a feeling that China is going to be forced to stimulate their economy, then why would any of these assets go down?
So that's, I think, you know, over the long, that's a very fair question. And now these asset prices would go up in nominal dollars. Would go, you know, would not perform as well in real dollars. But I think in the shorter term, you know, one of the things that you do have to worry about for equity markets are, there's a number of things, but one of them is the multiple. Mm. And the multiple has, you know, the average multiple has been in the mid-teens going back since the beginning of time. And it's been very rare cases where you've seen multiples of 21 times or greater, which is where we are now on forward earnings. And so going back to your point about the dot-com bubble is, you know, in 1997, we were about the same multiple as we are now. And so if you bought in 1997, you clearly did very well in 98, 99, but assuming that one just held on, which most people did, 5 years later, your investment was actually down in nominal dollars and was down a lot in real dollars 5 years later.
This is exactly the fear that every single person listening has, Eric. You just explained why we all obsess, and I was joking, Eric's tortured at cocktail parties, because this is the thing everybody wants to ask him. But it's true, I can imagine, because this is our fear, that people are looking at these really nice gains in their retirement and just think, this thing could go and I could just lose it all when I'm going to need it.
Yes. I mean, even if we, and then, you know, it's always hard to know when to get out. So let's say that the S&P goes to, you know, 5,700, 6,000 in the next, you know, year and a half. If we then have a, you know, a correction that say is 20%, which is a normal sort of correction, especially with the multiples that we'd be talking about when we get to, you know, getting to 5,700 or 6,000, you get a 20% correction and from 6,000 and you're down to 4,800. And all of a sudden you look up and your 3-year returns, while you had some years where you felt really good, ultimately, your returns 3 years later from where we are today are not good. And the reason was because your starting point was this 21 times multiple. Yeah. Right now, we're trading, if you assume 10% earnings growth in 24, 10% in 25 and 10% in 26. And I said, that's guaranteed. We're trading at 17 and a half times 2026 numbers, right? And so that's what really presents the risk, where if you get any sort of shock, economy rolling over, et cetera, that's where you really have risk.
So that was my very next question. This is such a fascinating conversation because to understand the rally, you have to put the fundamentals aside and really focus on this, monetization of the debt, because that's what's driving it. The problem is you can't forget about the fundamentals, because it sounds like what you're saying, fundamentals and or a shock could kind of force themselves back into the equation and be the catalyst for some kind of sell-off or some kind of pullback.
That's right. And I think we're also, we are late cycle. Now, late cycle doesn't mean it can't go on for another 2 years. But when you think about where the unemployment rate is, it's at the bottom of the historic range. This is the second longest period of time that we've been, under 4%, for this long. And, at the output gap in the economy is we're basically at a full economy. And so now debt levels are very low. And a bunch of the consumer has been flush with cash still from COVID. But that's one thing to be concerned about, is just that, are we going to stay at a 3.7% unemployment rate for another year, 2 years, 2.5 years? And even if that recession comes in that 2026 period that I was talking about, from 6,000, you could chop 20% off from 6,000. And then all of a sudden, your investment's not looking very good.
Yeah, nobody wants that kind of drawdown. We got some questions coming in about crypto. We mentioned it. I love this as a sentiment. Ask an analyst, especially someone like Eric, who has a view on across all assets, what he gets asked the most about. And that's a good sentiment read for you. And you told me NVIDIA and Bitcoin right before we came on air. Ralph is asking, are you seeing anything in crypto, in the crypto derivatives space? But just generally, how are you thinking about what we've seen and the fact that we're now in this world where there are ETFs around Bitcoin? How are you thinking about the crypto space?
I think that was a big change was the access to be able to trade in your stock account. And I just think that's a monumental change in the crypto space. And when it first happened, initially there was a lot of buildup. Then we actually got the official announcement. Bitcoin moved higher for the first few days and then actually retraced and then was below where the official announcement occurred. And then, of course, from there, it's been straight up. But I think the ability to hold this ETF has just given access to just a far larger group of people. And we are currently, the environment right now is ripe for speculation. And momentum. And so that's what's going on. I can't say I have a strong view around, where it's going to go in the short term, but I think that this is the environment. This environment has been just the perfect combination between the ETF approval and the overall environment.
And risk on, right? And risk on and the everything rally. What about gold? Because we have, it's kind of funny in this universe when we're talking about the everything rally, probably the best example of that is that you have digital gold, what people want to refer to as digital gold, and the actual gold, which seems to be finally breaking out.
Yeah. So I think part of it's sort of the laggard trade where, people are looking for, or were looking for, what hadn't moved yet. And really, silver and gold really had been stuck. And so I think it was a situation where people were seeing what Bitcoin was doing and seeing what other asset classes were doing and say, oh, okay, this hasn't moved yet. Let's move there. And then once it gets started, gets the momentum going as it did, people just piled on.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you're watching this. Chet is asking if your thoughts on the reverse repo. It's been draining steadily, providing liquidity to markets. Any implications short-term, tax season also coming?
So two factors. So the reverse repos, and then I can also speak about the TGA. So the reverse repos, last I saw, I believe were about $420 billion on their way, but very likely to zero, and probably by you know, maybe the third quarter of this year. And so I think the concern there is as reverse repos go lower, there's a lot of concern about bank reserves. And I think that this is one of the reasons why QT is going to start to roll off. I think the Fed is definitely, you know, watching this, you know, watching the move there. As far as the TGA goes, it's right now at about, I think it's around $750 billion. It's been pretty steady there. One of the big questions is, into the election, is Yellen going to draw that down in order to add liquidity to the system? Mm. And that can be done. And, you know, so that's something that I think people are watching. And if you just think about if she were to draw down from, say, 750 to 250, and were to do over the course of, you know, 3-4 months before the election, that could add $500 billion of liquidity to the system. And so I think that some, as everyone does their calculus around, you know, how the next 9 months are going to play out, that has to be in there as a possibility. And we don't know whether that's going to happen or not. It's really, you know, sort of in her hands.
Yeah. These are wild times. Eric, such a great conversation. You do such good work there at Cantor, and it's so nice to have you on today so we can sort of get a view across all of these assets. And really, you really helped us understand. I think some of it is counterintuitive, but there's a lot going on underneath the hood. So thank you for pointing that out for us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, Maggie, thank you very much. Really, really enjoyed the conversation.
Awesome stuff. We will be back. We, of course, have employment tomorrow. We're going to be talking a lot about some of the stuff we just talked about with Eric. We have Sri on to discuss that. And of course, next week, we'll be doing the big campaign where all of this will come up. We're going to talk about some of the, in a really frank way, have people on are going to talk about the challenges we face, and then importantly, what we can do and some solutions to make sure that we sort of secure our financial futures. So we're looking forward to that. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Take care and good luck out there.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. At Real Vision, we arm you with the expert knowledge, time-efficient tools, and a powerful network to help you succeed on your financial journey. Get a taste of financial freedom with our free offer at realvision.com/free.